The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Plus, we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Welcome to Holy Smoke, the Spectator's religion podcast. I'm Damian Thompson. And I'm joined today by William Moore, the Spectator's features editor, who, in an excellent article in this week's magazine, asks, is the Church of England going to apologise for Christianity? As he says, a report by something called the Oversight Group has declared that the Church should say sorry publicly, not just for profiting from the evils of slavery through investment in the South Sea Company, but for, quote, seeking to destroy diverse African traditional religious belief systems. And having apologised, it recommends the Church, quote, reach beyond theological institutions and enable all Africans to discover the varied belief systems and spiritual practices of their forebears and their efficacy. Will, you quite rightly draw attention in your article to the horrific nature of some of the so-called spiritual practices that Church of England missionaries swept away, and I wonder if you could just give me a quick rundown of what you discovered.
Well, I suppose the first thing to say is that there has not yet been an apology from the Church. This is part of recommendations put forward by this oversight group, who are an independent body. However, the Church Commissioners, which is the investment arm of the Church of England, chaired, of course, by Justin Welby, the Church Commissioners have warmly welcomed all of the report's recommendations, and they specify that includes, as they put it, suggestions around truth-telling. So in other words, what you might call the spiritual demands of the report. A lot of attention has been in the media about the financial demands, you know, raising up to £1 billion in reparations. That dominated the newspapers all of last week. But I think the spiritual demands were rather overlooked, which is why I wanted to write this piece. So there has not been any apology from the Church of England yet. However, what concerns me is that if there is going to be one, if all of these recommendations are indeed brought forward, at some point, there will be an apology. And if there is, I rather think it's important to be very specific about what that apology is for. And what really worries me about the wording as it currently stands in the oversight group is that it is so broad as to have very alarming implications. Because what do you mean when you say that it's wrong to seek to destroy diverse African traditional religious belief systems? Well, what I would argue is that missionary, by definition, Christian missionary, by definition, is replacing a set of existing religious belief systems with a new religious belief system. I mean, that's what it is. So, in other words, you could end up in a situation where the Church of England is apologising for Christianity. Now, I should say that a Church of England spokesman said that this is not how the Church interprets these recommendations. They don't interpret them as a call for apologising for spreading the gospel, and instead it's about being transparent about appalling abuses in the past. But I must say that I don't see how the words, as they are phrased, can be interpreted as anything other than an apology for mission, for the reasons I've just stated. So you might end up in this bizarre scenario where the Church makes a formal apology, which, despite what they may say, you know, this is not apologising for mission, it actually is, you know, in terms of what they are actually saying. So I was slightly reminded of that that bit in the film Withnail and I, where the, you know, help, we've gone on holiday by mistake. It's more like, help, we've apologised for Christianity by mistake. So that is what worries me. And as you pointed out there, Damien, some of these traditional religious belief systems, which were replaced by Christianity, by Anglicanism in this case, I really think most people would agree are not good in and of themselves. Just to name a few, we're talking about idolatry, we're talking about witchcraft, the practice of twin infanticide, which used to be a practice in Southeast Nigeria and also in Madagascar and other places, and it was all but eradicated by Christian missionary. And in the most extreme cases of all, cannibalism and human sacrifice. And these are explicitly religious beliefs. They are done in the name of religion. And I just think it can't be seen as wrong to want to eradicate these things. And the problem with this report and the wording of it, just to go back to this, is, as I say, it is so broad. It is not nuanced. It doesn't specify which bits it considers abuse or which bits it considers to have been wrong to try to eradicate. And unless it does, that wording is just too broad to use. And so I really do hope that the church, if it is going to make a formal apology of some kind, will demand a rewording or just reject the wording of the oversight group's way that it's phrased it, and they'll find a new way of explaining precisely what they're apologising for.
Exactly. Well, I think your suspicions are justified, and I think it's worth pointing out that this oversight group, which may describe itself as an independent body, but the fact is that it was set up by the Church of England, and it is chaired by the Bishop of Croydon, whose life's work, the Guardian tells us, has been shaped by her own personal sense of injustice and disadvantage. She was born in Barbados, I think. I think also she's a former sociologist. But just to give you a flavour of her thinking, she says, what we're talking about is the way in which a Western Christian understanding of faith was imposed on African people. And it was a Christianity that othered them. You know that the verb other is going to make an appearance at some stage. And delineated them as subhuman. Well, I'm sure there was plenty of what these days would be considered outrageous racism in many of the things missionaries said. Something that isn't pointed out by the oversight group is that, in fact, the Church of England played a very significant role in the abolition of the international slave trade.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's precisely right. And there's another point there. There's a few things, actually, from the bishop's words I would like to pick up on. The first being that the idea of Western religion coming in. That is true. However, of course, it has to be pointed out that there's a lot of Christianity in Africa that is pre-Western, particularly, you know, North Africa and Augustine of Hippo, and then the Ethiopian church is extremely ancient. So it is more complicated than was stated, I think, by the bishop. But the other point is the idea that it, somehow black Africans were not considered made in the image of God is surely poppycock, because you don't risk your life. And it was, let's be clear about this, it was extremely dangerous work, missionary work. Missionaries would bring their own coffins with them often. They get a one-way ticket and they bring their own coffins with them because of how dangerous it is. You do not risk your own life to save people's souls, which is how they viewed it, if you think they're somehow not fully human. You do that for people that you believe are made in the image of God and need your spiritual help. That's why you do it. And of course, the other point which I make in the piece is what I think is so insulting about the way this report is phrased in this section is I think it's an insult not only to these missionaries who risked their lives, but to the very early converts, the African converts, who faced real persecution for converting. Some of them lost their lives, most famously the Ugandan martyrs, but many others as well. Many were beaten by their spouses, by their husbands. They were hounded by their village communities, the tribal communities. I mean, this was real persecution and oppression, and it's incredibly brave of them to bear this, but they did it because they believed it truly was not just important, the most important thing. And if you're going to say, well, actually, a lot of this was a mistake, it was wrong to give up quite a lot of these spiritual practices, what are you saying about the memory of these people? You're saying, oh, actually, sorry, it was optional all along. I mean, that is the implication anyway. And if that's not the intention of the oversight report, then I really think it has been poorly drafted. It's been poorly written, because this is the implication that it is giving. And I think it's quite unavoidable. And then the final point which you made, Damien, which I think was very good, is of course correct to say that Christianity was instrumental in abolishing the slave trade. And there's a bit in the book by the Baptist missionary, the Reverend R.H. Stone, whose memoir I quote in the piece. And I didn't get this bit into the piece because it was all getting a bit long. But he at one point he says that the people who oppose him most in his missionary are a lot of the tribal leaders that he comes across. And they hate him and other missionaries because they correctly assume that he and the other missionaries are all against the slave trade. And a lot of these leaders benefited financially out of the slave trade. You know, they would sell prisoners from war to Portuguese slave ships or whatever. So missionaries often were some of the most vocally anti-slavery Christians you could find.
And one thing that did strike me was the immensely patronising tone of the language used. The report says that the church should reach beyond theological institutions and enable all Africans to discover their belief systems. As if the Church of England, this is the Church of England's job to enable Africans to discover their spirituality. You have to ask yourself, who exactly is doing the othering here? And anyway, I think it has to be seen in the context of what I regard as a racket, which is the vast transfer of funds from bodies connected to the Church of England. I'm not sure exactly who's going to be footing the bill for this, but, you know, the Church of England-affiliated bodies that benefited from slavery to community groups representing people who were damaged by the slave trade. I'm not quite sure which groups these are. I suspect they would be groups with a heavy politicised agenda. But it sounds to me really like the transfer of funds from one unaccountable institution to another group of unaccountable institutions. And as for Bishop Mallet's fatuous suggestion that £100 million isn't enough and it should be £1 billion, I think it's no wonder that Anglican churchgoers are despairing, and I think it's probably only as a result of reading your article that they will know that within the report is effectively a surrender of the most precious thing in all Christianity, which is its basic salvific message.
Yeah, and I mean, that is what I found the most worrying thing. I mean, again, as I say, lots has been written about the financial side of the whole thing, but the spiritual demand of it is what interested me. And I must say, it does affect how I view the rest of the report. In my mind, it undermines some of the good faith from which you think a lot of this stuff is coming from. To be generous about it, I think a lot of it might just be pure carelessness. You know, you sort of get caught up in such a, what you might call managerialese, you know, the kind of way of writing all this stuff, that you don't quite realise that you've made a trap and fallen into your own trap here.
I think there is a problem with, I hesitate to use the word syncretism, but something akin to syncretism, which is affecting the Western churches generally. I mean, this Pope has said that God wills religious diversity, which I think would have been news to missionaries who died for the faith. And just the other day, we had Cardinal Dolan, of all people, Cardinal Archbishop of New York, saying that Easter Sunday, Passover, and Ramadan are about the triumph of light and life, the renewal of God's life within us. So in other words, God is working through Ramadan as well as Easter to renew his light within us. And it just suggests to me that there is, as the Pope might say when talking about the Ukrainians and Russia, a hoisting of the white flag.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I mean, obviously very in favour of interfaith conversation. I think it's extremely important. But there has to be such a clear dividing line about not slipping from that into religious relativism, where it's all just kind of the same. There's lots of things I think Christians can learn from other faiths, of course, but that always has to be done while, in my mind, while keeping hold of what is true, what you believe to be true as a Christian, or else it becomes very messy very quickly. And I think the wording in this report as it stands is a very good example of that. It is just too sloppy, it's too broad. Therefore, the implications of it, I just think, cannot be accepted and should not be accepted by the church leaders. And if they're going to issue an apology at some point, they need to rephrase it. If they don't rephrase it, I think they should resign, frankly, because they will be, in effect, apologising for missionary. And they may deny that, and they may say, that is not how we interpret these words. It doesn't say cultural systems. It says religious belief systems. That is what it says. So I do not see how it can be interpreted differently.
And if I could just make one final point. Western church leaders are very happy when African Christians, I don't know, demanding reparations, drawing attention to slavery, talking about racism. That suits them very fine because it sort of fits into their own left-wing narrative. But God forbid that African Christians should say something that they regard as not progressive. Now, all the bishops' conferences, the Catholic bishops' conferences of Africa, have rejected fiducia supplicans, the very messy suggestion by the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith that there should be blessings for gay couples. And basically the bishops of Africa have said it's not happening in this continent. And the Vatican has said effectively, well, that's fine, we won't ask you to. And the message, not very carefully concealed, is they're Africans, they don't know any better.
Mm. There's a very similar tension within the Anglican Communion at the moment because of the Church of England's decision to bless gay couples inside same-sex unions. Because of that, a group of 12 Anglican and bishops from the conservative group called the Global South Fellowship of Anglican Churches, they issued a statement last year saying they no longer recognise the Church of England as the mother church of Anglicanism. They no longer recognise Justin Welby as the first among equals. I mean, this tension is getting worse. So it's a very similar thing happening within Anglicanism as it sounds like is happening in Catholicism. And you said earlier, Damien, I think completely correctly, that it's very patronising to have this idea that the Church of England should be telling all these Christians in Africa how to kind of reconnect with the spirituality of their forebears, when 90% of all of the Christian persecution, the persecution of Christians that happens in the world today, happens in Africa. Christian Africans are extremely persecuted from radical Islam and from political oppression. I mean, they're often extremely brave to keep their devotion as strong as they do. And again, it's this sort of idea that, well, is some of this actually all optional? Maybe you could just readopt some old pre-Christian spiritual ideas, and maybe it really doesn't actually matter as much as you thought it was. It's such a patronising implication.
And also, I can't help noticing that when either the Vatican or Lambeth Palace are forced to say something about the slaughter of Christians in Nigeria, they're usually bloody careful not to mention who did the slaughtering. William Moore, it's a great piece. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Damien. A pleasure to talk to you.